Hi everyone, you're listening to Like Her, the podcast that celebrates women doing fantastic things in the realms of beauty, fitness, wellness, and everything else in between. Like Her is a space for women to share their ideas, have honest conversations, and most importantly, have a good laugh. I'm Rosanna, and each episode I'll be speaking to an inspiring woman that will hopefully make you think, I like her. So on that note, get yourself comfy, get yourself a nice drink, and enjoy the episode. Hello everyone, welcome to another episode of Like Her. Today I'm sat with a guest that, what, I haven't told you this yet, when I made a list for my podcast, Lara Intimates was on the list of like guests that I was like, I want to get them on, which is really cool. I wanted to do this episode because I wanted to speak about fast fashion, because I know nothing about it and I'm guilty of consuming it, so I thought it'd be good to educate myself and everyone else. Initially, Like Her was inspired by different women to inspire different women, and this brand I found really inspiring. They embody everything that Like Her is about, from their ethos on sustainability, which I think is a vital part of health and wellness nowadays, their desire to empower women, not just through their product, but down to the women that work for them, and also their honest attitude. So I'm very excited to welcome Cindy of Lara Intimates to the episode. Thank you for your time and for having me, and I'm looking forward to talking about boobs and bras.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
And I just thought, why don't we just start with how the brand started?
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm American.
Which I didn't know until about half an hour ago, because we've been talking over email.
Yeah, so I moved to London 7 years ago, and I went to London College of Fashion, and I ended up on the bachelor's degree for lingerie and swimwear design. And I ended up meeting Faith Leaves there, who's now my business partner. And both of us, we took a gap year during our university. So Faith went to Australia and she worked for a swimwear brand out there. And I was here and I worked for a technology company, actually, instead of working in fashion. And that was basically because both of us kind of, during the placement year, bonded over this.
Was it a sandwich?
Yes. Okay. And then we came back. Yeah. So we both really struggled to find good quality work in the industry. We were really surprised that almost all jobs didn't really pay, or they were short-term internships, and a lot of them were, you were doing like CAD drawings on the computer, or you were pulling together mood boards. It wasn't the kind of real like design and pattern cutting skills that we'd been learning at uni. So we were kind of like, why are we learning this if the jobs don't really exist? It was just this huge disconnect, and it just didn't make sense to us. So we ended up, when we came back from our placement year, we teamed up in, was it the summer of 2016? And we were like, okay, we have to do a final collection for university. Let's team up and do it together. And we created this collection. So by February of our final year of university, we finished the collection. And then in May, we did a Kickstarter crowdfunding round. And then in July of 2017, we set up production, and then in September we launched online, and that was like officially when Lara Intimates started.
It's so interesting to hear and know that people's uni projects turn into businesses. I love it.
I know, isn't that crazy?
It's just such a good, I guess it's, it, uni buys you time in that way, doesn't it? And it's like, okay, I'm going to do something, I might as well do it so that I can have a business or whatever afterwards.
I said that to Faith when we were working on the project. I was like, because we, at first we were like, oh, maybe we should work for a few years, save some money, do this later. And I was like, when are we ever going to have a year where there's nothing else that we're required to do except this? Exactly. So I think it's a good opportunity.
And did you, obviously you were saying about the jobs there just not being any, was there, I know I asked you just now, was there somebody in the industry that you kind of looked up to, or in underwear or lingerie, or were you kind of like, there's nothing, let's just create it? in the style that you want?
Yeah, I mean, I found it really difficult because the more that I was in the industry, like studying or trying to find jobs, the more that I felt disconnected from the industry and like I really didn't want to be a part of the fashion industry. So I don't think there's, I don't know. There are definitely some women that I admire in sustainability.
Okay.
But in the traditional fashion sphere, not necessarily.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some great, really talented people. It just didn't resonate with me and what I wanted to do. I mean, I think we felt like, Faith and I felt like if we were feeling this disconnect, and fashion is also moving towards this sort of alternative direct consumer brand type of trend, a lot of people are feeling it and feeling disconnected from the traditional fashion industry. Yeah. So we just kind of wanted to fill the gap that we saw, basically.
Have you heard of the brand Veja, the sneaker brand?
Yeah.
So they are really interesting because they were like, they were two French guys from like a finance background. They worked in economics and finance. And I can't remember how they got started, but sustainability, they had this concept, which was a lot of businesses base their business around being a business because they think that being ethical or sustainable isn't going to be financially viable. And so these French guys were like, what if we made a business around sustainability? Like, we could see how it works. And so they then made the trainers, and it's really, really successful. But sustainability is the core value of their business. Yeah. And, you know, they're on Net-a-Porter. They're like, they're making money.
They're everywhere.
Which just goes to show that you can be ethical and conscious and have that as your main framework and still be financially viable.
Yeah.
So what was it about sustainable? What kind of, I know you said that Faith was more into this sustainability than you were at the beginning, but what was that like spark, which was like, we need to do this?
I think, so Faith has, I think Faith knew about a lot of things to do with sustainability just growing up, whereas
Where is she from?
She's from Brighton, so she's British.
Right, okay, yeah. So, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, so she kind of learned about that much sooner than I did, whereas there were some lectures and things that I went to at London College of Fashion that really opened my eyes to what was going on, and before I really hadn't kind of encountered it. And once I saw it, I was sort of like, oh my god, like I don't want to do things this way. And we visited a factory in Wales. It was the last remaining specialist lingerie factory in the UK.
Oh, wow.
And they've actually since closed.
Oh,
so, but
sad.
We basically, originally we were thinking we'd manufacture our products there because now we do it all in-house.
Yeah.
And we went there and it was fine, but, you know, and everybody was nice, but it was really expensive and there was no kind of like innovative edge to it at all. And I was like, can't we do better than this?
Yeah.
And we saw, like, there was one woman that took 2 hours to make a pair of briefs that Faith can make in 11 minutes.
Yeah.
And we were like, we can totally do better than this.
Yeah.
So at first we were like, oh my God, it's too expensive. They had really high minimums. We weren't going to be able to meet it. And then on the train ride home from Wales, Faith was like, let's have our own factory.
Yeah.
I was like, okay. And it's great because it's become like the heart of the business, basically.
Yeah.
Like everything centers around the factory, which is really great. So maybe that's sort of the way that we're sort of comparable to Veja in that way. Like we're, the heart of our business is the sustainability, but the ethics in the factory.
And the production and the, like the spirit almost.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I was reading about how you do your pattern cutting and I didn't quite understand it, but basically I got the gist that you're quite sparing with your fabric and material. Is that right? I don't know anything about design. So do you like do the patterns like really close together on like the same piece of material? Is that how it works?
Yeah. I mean, to be perfectly transparent with you, every factory in the world will use, like, will create as little fabric waste as possible because it's, because it just makes sense financially.
Yeah.
I mean, because we have like bras. So here are some of
our... We have a table of bras in front of us.
Yeah, so I mean, these bras, you can see how small these pattern pieces are. It's not like having the front of a t-shirt that's like, you know, several, whatever. It's like really large. So you can squish a lot of pattern pieces together. So we have very little leftover fabric at the end. But we take all the scraps and we save them and we have them shredded, and we're working on a new product that will use the shred in something else.
Yeah. And where is it you get all of your materials from?
So there is a supplier in England that used to own a lingerie factory, and when all of his clients started moving to the Far East a few decades ago, he basically switched his business model to buy up their dead stock.
Yeah.
And he brings it back to a warehouse in the UK, and we shop for it here, basically.
Cool. Yeah. It's amazing. I love that. It's just, I just think... It can just be, if somebody's doing it, it means that it can be done, and then everybody should just do it.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about sizing, because before meeting, I gave you my 3 measurements, which are available on the website, aren't they?
Yeah, so I gave you a more updated version of the sizing that includes cup volume.
The cup thing,
yeah. So basically the 3 that you had were under bust, bust, and cup volume.
Yeah.
And... The 2 on the website right now are under bust and bust, but we find that the cup volume is quite good for women that have an F cup or larger. So we're going to be adding that to the website in about a month.
And I wear a 32 double D bra. And what size did you come up with?
I measured you at a 30G or a 32F.
Oh my God. Yeah, I'm so not in the know. And Cindy's very kindly bought me some samples so I can try some on, and I'm sure they will... feel so much more comfortable. We were just saying how little women, I think we're getting better, but how little we know about our bodies. Like, we don't really know about periods, we don't really know about sizing for bras and what affects it. So it's good to have a brand that's like actually looking after the customer and their boobies.
Yeah.
So just flipping back to the sustainability thing, and what I find interesting is I was looking at your products and I was like, okay, a bra is £48. I know that a Victoria's Secret bra is £48.
It's the same, right?
Right, yeah. So can you like break down what the main differences would be? Obviously, they spend loads on advertising and the show and blah, blah, blah. But like, where they make their bras, or where do most... high street places make their stuff?
I have read that there is a certified ethical factory in, I think, Sri Lanka that is used by Victoria's Secret and M&S.
Yeah.
But that was in a vague statistical report, so I don't actually know anything about it personally. There's also been reports about using prison labor to make their products. I don't know anything. So to be honest with you, I don't have an in. We had a customer come to a pop-up event of ours one time, and she was like, I used to be a trend forecaster at Victoria's Secret, and I tried to tell them to take on inclusivity and they wouldn't do it.
No way.
So you hear like these crazy stories, but I don't know exactly. But in terms of the pricing, to be honest with you, I have no idea how they landed at that price. Mm.
I think it's so expensive for what it is.
It's really expensive for what it is. I mean, sometimes the materials are soft or comfortable at Victoria's Secret. I grew up in the States, so I'm walking distance to like 3 Victoria's Secret stores.
Yeah.
So they had a good reputation when like I was a teenager, and their underwear is fine. But I have no idea how their profit margins must be really, really large.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, or their supply chain is very complex and expensive to run. I don't know what it is. It's probably the retail element of it is probably really, really expensive.
I think as well, because I know that I have friends that they'll spend money on bras because it's important. And I just think if all the bras are around the same price, then you might as well do the one that's like handmade and sustainable and nicer.
Yeah.
And I also like that you don't have loads and loads of styles. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not, there's not, sometimes you're just scrolling and it's just like, this is like, they're just bras. I just want something simple that's going to fit. And is that because you're so on it with sizing and fit and comfort?
Well, I think it's, we just kind of looked at the way that women shop for bras, and we were like, okay, how many shapes do you really need in your wardrobe? You need something with skinny straps that's easy to wear with a regular top or a racer back. You need something that is just comfortable and easy to throw on for anything. And then we've got the Clio that has a foam strap on it. So if you have big boobs or you want a little bit of extra comfort on your shoulder all day, that's a really nice option. So we just thought about what are the few styles that we need within a core range.
Yeah.
And the three that I've brought, the Ren, the Ava, and the Clio bras, are the three that we've had for almost 2 years now, and they really sell really well.
Yeah.
And we just basically bring those out in new colors, which works really well because we work with dead stock fabric.
Yeah.
So we can only get 150 meters at a time. So then we just figure out, okay, this is how many units we can sell before we have to turn
but
it
that's
off.
That's nice because it's almost like everything is limited edition. It's more special, right?
And that's, people love that because they want the same shape of bra that they know fits them well. They don't want any questions, especially when you're shopping online. You want to just be able to get it and know that it's going to fit.
Random question, but do you get a lot of women and young girls with big boobs that shop?
Yeah.
Because they're not being provided for elsewhere.
Yes. So, okay. I feel 50% of people that walk in are I'm sick of shopping at Bravissimo. That is the place.
The tagline.
I don't want to scare them. Anyway, so... it's funny, when Faith and I started, the goal was to be a sustainable alternative to the high street with good prices, good products. And when we were developing the size range, we both measured our own underbusts, and we were both quite small, so we measured 28. So we're okay, we'll start at a 28 band because we're not going to not wear our own product.
Yeah.
And then the largest size at the time that we had people asking for on Instagram was a 36E.
Right.
So we did a 28A to a 36E, which I think is... can't remember. Anyway, so now we've expanded it to include 60 sizes.
Wow.
So we've gone... we expanded from a 26 to a 36, and we do A through I cups now, so it's a total of 60 sizes.
That's amazing.
And it was because when we started, we noticed that a lot of women that were coming in were 28DD, 30G, 30F, and we started basically taking when we only had an E cup in a 28, for example, but somebody came in and they needed a 26F, we started taking in the bands and putting the bigger cup on it.
So
we were doing these custom things because we had so many customers that wanted the small back, large cup.
Yeah.
Because if you have a small...
which I guess is quite... that's quite common, isn't it? When you're younger, you tend to be smaller. But if you have got boobs, you're going to have... you're going to need the bigger cup.
But it's not even an age restriction thing.
No.
There are loads of women that are older that have it as well, that are small around the back, and they have bigger boobs. And it's hard to shop on the high street for those because most brands started a 32.
Yeah, this is really interesting what you told me about how you, at uni, you didn't really get taught sizing, which is, especially for lingerie and swimwear.
I know,
like,
I hope they've
fuck?
Added it to the curriculum now because it's really important.
And how... yeah, you were just like, well, let's actually measure what we are and then base it on that. Whereas anybody, any woman that's done their own boob measuring, it's always like, add 2 and then the difference is your cup size and then -4. And it's like, well, how about just having it what you actually are? So yeah, that's why I said I'm always a 32DD, which I'm not at all. But do you ever get anyone that's smaller than a 28?
So we have a 26 band now.
Yeah.
And we have a couple of customers that are 24, but it's only I could count them on a hand. It's not that many.
So just talking about core values of Laura into it, I feel like we've kind of discussed it already just from where the conversation's going. But what would you say solidly the core values are?
So everything that we do centers around this mission that we exist to celebrate women, which is a really interesting thing for us because the obvious answer is that you're catering to the customer, you're being really inclusive. We want to make it feel like any woman, whether she is young and her boobs have just gotten bigger and she wants a new bra that fits really well, or she has a hard to find bra size, or it's somebody that's post surgery or has just gotten pregnant or just finished nursing, we want all of those people to be able to come in and feel included. But then the other side of it is that there's 40 million garment workers in the world, and there's a lot of women in that pool, and they're living in very, very difficult conditions. And a lot of times that will be in other countries, but it happens in the UK as well.
Yeah.
And we want to take that mission of celebrating women from the customer all the way through the factory to the beginning design stages,
yeah,
basically.
That's amazing. I think that's really important, because happy workers, happy product.
Yeah.
And it's, there's no point like putting out this image that it's like sustainable when like your workers are like miserable.
Oh my God, my biggest fear at the moment is that any of my like employees will ever feel like a PR story. Like,
yeah.
I spend more time thinking about that than I do about the actual PR
business. Yeah,
like,
it's
so important.
But that's
so
nice. I can imagine it being really scary having your own employees.
Oh yeah, I'm like, what am I doing?
Have you ever had a job where you've been treated not very nice?
I worked in a fashion showroom for a little under a year, and they took me with them to Milan and Paris Fashion Week, and there were several times that I got just like screamed at for stuff that was
really
not my fault.
Yeah.
And then my boss had like the fancy hotel across the street, and I was in this like crappy one across.
Yeah.
So anyway, but it was okay. I think I definitely haven't had, like, in the grand scheme of things,
yeah,
I've definitely had it pretty good. I've had some good opportunities in London.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think when you have been, I've been shouted at before on like a restaurant floor,
oh
like
God,
and reduced
awful
to tears. Oh,
aww,
so bad. But I think I've had like quite a few different jobs, and along the way, you just, I think you sort of go towards like, okay, I want to work for myself, and I want to not be like all of the people that have
mm-hmm
shouted at me or been impatient or not understanding.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually you get to this point where you become the kind of owner or manager that's anti everything that you've ever been treated,
yeah,
if that makes sense.
I know that I definitely felt like when I moved to London, I found it really difficult in terms of finding a nice community of friends here.
Mm.
And it probably partly because London College of Fashion is very scattered.
Yeah.
So it was very difficult. And I hope that I can create a community that is totally the opposite of what I experienced. It feels really warm and
yeah
inviting, and something that is also the antithesis of what's going on in fast fashion
yeah
manufacturing. I
yeah
think that's really important.
Do you think as well, just fashion in general, I mean, it's a bit of a no-brainer, but fashion in general doesn't, it's not the nicest of industries sometimes, but it can be. So it's about like creating brands that are nice within fashion.
Yeah, I mean, think about how much we all love our clothes and love getting dressed in the morning,
yeah,
and love shopping. Like, that's, I think that that's a part of human nature. That
apart from my dad, who, like, he said if there was like a robotic wardrobe that would just hand him clothes that he didn't have to think about it, he would have it. And I was like, that's the most male thing ever. But
that,
yeah,
is,
I agree.
Yeah, I don't know if I could get on board with that.
No,
one
not at all.
But
it's part of expressing yourself, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And I don't think that that's going away. So
yeah,
I think we need to figure out how to I just don't understand why, like, one of the most enjoyable parts of my day, like getting dressed or going shopping, should be something that has such a dark, like, underside to it.
Yeah.
Because it's also something that people like so much that they will spend, you know, a fair amount of money on.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
It's what I probably spend the most amount of money on, is clothes.
Yeah.
Fast fashion facts. Do you have anything scary?
Oh God. So actually, we're sitting in the Trampery right now.
Yes.
And we're a part of a sustainable fashion accelerator program that they're doing right now.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And we went to a workshop last week with a woman named Vanessa Podmore, who's
okay
the former VP of sustainability at Burberry.
Wow.
And it was like, I cried after I left.
Really?
Like, it was just, I mean, it made me so ambitious and feel this sense of urgency. But the stuff that she talked about in her experience of managing supply chains,
yeah,
just was really hard to hear.
Yeah.
So I mean, the facts that stuck out to me the most are, there are about 40 million garment workers in the world.
Mm.
The ones that I find really difficult to think about are the ones in terms of abuse, especially towards women.
Yeah.
So last week, there were statistics that we discussed that were saying one out of 14 women that work in apparel manufacturing are abused at some point life, and one in seven are raped during their life. And a lot of the child labor that happens is because the women that work in the factories live in very poor neighborhoods, and a lot of times they have to work overtime just to be able to feed their families.
Yeah.
And they can't leave their children at home in an unsafe area, so they just go with them, and then they end up working. Yeah.
And I'm sure they probably give birth to them in the factories as well. There's always horror stories like that as well. So what can somebody... Because I really feel... And I'm going to hold my hands up. I buy into fast fashion. And I think, for me, I have to feel really guilty about something to not do it.
Mm.
And so this is why I wanted to start this as well. I'm like, actively go and look at stuff which is going to make me feel horrible for buying into it. Do you think that's like a good way for people to do it, just to educate themselves? Or are there, what would you suggest to somebody that's like, right, I want to just do one thing that's gonna be more sustainable in terms of fashion?
I mean, you have to think about you have to think about the fast fashion business model.
Right.
So H&M is saying, okay, we have X number of people as our customers, and we are going to have a good profitable year if all of those people are spending £30 a month 12 months of the year. So if you go in and you only buy from them once a year or once every 18 months, you're not feeding
them
what they need,
yeah.
Because then they just have cheap products with a low margin that aren't selling enough. But at the same time, if those products are going to wear out really fast and then you have to go back and get more, that's how they get you in. So I think it's about really looking at the quality of something and making sure that you're buying pieces that you're going to have for a long time. And no matter how much recycling or eco-friendly things that we buy, we have to stop putting garments into landfills.
Yeah.
And that's also another really big ethical piece, because there are a lot of poorer countries where our old textiles are just getting dumped on them, and they have to deal with it. And that's a really, really unfair thing. So yeah, I think you need to try to buy more sustainable, but it's more of it is about what you buy and how long it lasts.
My dad's parents are Spanish, and my grandma had... She was very into quality. And actually, when I stayed with my Spanish family last month, my cousin was telling me that my grandma was like very ahead of her time. She was always wearing red lipstick. And a lot of the other aunties said, she's dressing like a prostitute because she's wearing like red lipstick and always had her nails done and was wearing like fashionable clothes. And my dad and my sister are very similar to her in the sense that they will... buy one pair of shoes and they'll spend money on it and it will last them, and then they'll get their coat or their bag or their belt and they'll invest in it. And I think she had this saying which was, the cheap is always expensive. Basically meaning that like if you buy something for cheap, it's going to be so much more expensive because you have to buy 10 of them instead of one that's going to last you.
I've heard the I'm too poor to buy cheap.
Yeah, that's so good.
Yeah, I like that one a lot.
That's a really good one. I'm going to quote that. How long can you expect a Lara bra to last? Because I read sometimes that you're meant to like change your bra every 6 months. Is that bullshit? Because I never do that.
I think that's if you wear a wired bra and it's not very... I think a lot of times wired bras will poke out after like 6 months.
Yeah.
We don't have a wired bra in the range, so I've never tested it. These bras, I would expect if you wear them multiple times a week, they should last at least a year.
Wow.
So yeah, if you have two or three on rotation, they should last a year or a year and a half.
Yeah.
And then you have to wash them delicate cold in a laundry basket, in a laundry bag, because that protects the elastics.
Okay.
Otherwise, they might get damaged and then it'll wear out faster.
Yeah.
The other thing is that on the back of the bras, there is a hook and eye.
Yeah.
And you want to buy it when it's fitting on the loosest hook.
Right.
A lot of people think it's the middle hook so that you can gain or lose weight, but I don't recommend that because these bands are really stretchy and soft. But if you buy it on the loosest hook, then when the elastic wears out a little bit, then you have somewhere to go and you can make it tighter. Yeah. So actually, if you buy it, like if you buy a 32 when you're actually a 30 and you buy it fitting like that, it's only going to last you a third of the time.
Yeah,
so then
yeah,
you
yeah.
end up having to buy more.
Is that with any bra, would you say that?
Yeah, I would.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
I mean, I don't know what other brands say, but that's what I would
recommend.
Yeah, that
makes sense. Yeah, I've never bought a bra. I mean, I do always go by the middle one, but I never thought it was because of gaining or losing weight. I just thought it was like, well, no bra really fits me, so maybe if I go on the middle one, it's like the best of the worst kind of thing.
It's kind of like the way I've been describing it recently is you kind of want it like skinny jeans. You want to buy it as snug as is comfortable.
Because it will
stretch
a little bit.
But when you buy it, it's the tightest it'll ever be, and the elastics will give out over time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess it's... buy, what is it? There's that quote which is like, don't eat less, eat better. So it's kind of like, buy less, buy better or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
Quality
I think so.
Over quantity. Definitely.
Definitely.
Cool. So I want to talk about Lara the name because I know that it's based around this kind of maybe fictional character.
Yeah.
But. Is she like a mixture of just all these, like, have you got like loads of friends that inspire you? Or is it like, I don't know, who is she?
We came up with this like persona, and for a while she was like this illustrated character because I don't know, we just thought about this girl that is super stylish, really cool. She doesn't want to compromise on her style, but she cares a lot about sustainability.
Yeah.
And the person that we thought about was sort of mid-20s.
Yeah.
So not spending £100 on a bra, but knows that they can spend more than £20 on a bra.
Yeah.
So that was kind of the persona. And then we went from there. And I think that was really helpful when we were developing the product range.
Yeah.
But now I think we go more based on who the customers are and the kind of energy that we're getting from them.
Yeah, that's good. So
yeah.
It's constantly evolving and
totally.
Adapting and changing,
yeah.
which is good. And I've got a question. How do you choose your models? Because you have, like, all of your models are so gorgeous and so different. And on Instagram as well, you have so many of your customer photos, which is nice.
Yeah.
Are you gearing now towards just the Lara person being the customer and that's who your models are?
Well, we use a combination of models and then also Lara partners, which are oftentimes customers that have been really loyal and they take really great photos.
Yeah.
So we basically say, can you send us those photos? They earn affiliate commission. So that's
cool.
One of the ways that we get more customers involved.
Yeah.
And when we have photo shoots, actually the thing that's been really challenging every time we have a photo shoot is that it's really hard. Usually in the first couple of years we could only afford like 3 models in each photo shoot.
Mm.
So to get diversity of sizing,
it's really expensive.
It's really hard because first of all there aren't many plus models. Even if you go to curve agencies, the biggest band that you can find is a 32. Like it's very, very hard. Yeah, somebody that measures like 32 and on their comp cards the sizing will be totally wrong.
Yeah.
Like I met a girl the other day that was a 32G and her card says that she was a 40D. And she was like, it was so weird.
I used to model and my card, I think, said different things to what I was.
One girl told us that her shoe size wasn't even right.
Yeah, that's the one that I used to get, like, please, can you see, because I've got big feet. I was like, please get my shoe size right, because I don't want to turn up and have to squeeze my feet into, like, a size 5. But I think what they tend to do is balance your sizing out a bit.
Yeah.
Because no girl, really, there's very few girls that are the industry standard, which is 34, 24, 34.
Yeah.
Naturally, there's not very many. With women as well, we tend to be a bit bottom
heavy.
And I think I used to be really small up top and then bigger. And so they'd just shave a couple of inches off the hips and then add it to the bust type thing. So that on paper, I would look a bit more balanced or equal.
Oh my
or whatever.
God, I can't believe that's a thing.
Yeah, it's gross.
So basically the hard thing is that one thing that we really find difficult is when we have a shoot, we like to have somebody that is a small size, like a 26 or 28C, because a lot of people when they see a C cup, they think, or a D cup, they think, oh my God, that's huge, that can't be my size.
Yeah.
But actually all that means is that your bust is 3 or 4 inches bigger than your underbust.
Yeah.
So we kind of need a range of sizes in order to give visual references to people in similar sizes
on
the website, but then trying to get the diversity in sizes and then also the diversity in terms of skin tone and hair color, and it makes it really challenging, but it's something that we like think about a lot and we're trying to do as
well.
Well,
you can understand how the industry has been how it's been for years and years, because in a way it's just so much easier to get generic looking people, isn't it?
Yeah, it's crazy. It's so hard to find somebody that is like, a curve model and actually has a different look. It's really hard.
On the website, there's a fact that says 85% of women wear the wrong bra size. I'm obviously a part of that because I'm wearing the wrong bra size. Is that like one of the sort of initial things that got you guys like, okay, we need to do something about this? Because it is pretty shocking, isn't it?
Yeah, I think
that's basically all women wear the wrong bra size.
Definitely. I mean, from our fittings, it's probably more than 85.
Yeah.
And I guess that that statistic is true, but it's also because every brand sizes
differently.
So
annoying.
So I'm not sure. I kind of half agree with it. I think the biggest thing that for us was like the gap in the market wasn't necessarily that everybody's wearing the wrong size. It was the fact that everybody was confused about bra sizing and nobody was giving them an answer.
Yeah.
And everybody was complaining about how uncomfortable bras are.
Yeah.
So there was just, I don't know, this like screaming market gap to get in there and make something better.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really interesting. Because again, you hear these things like that you read in magazines like throw away your bra every 6 months. Get measured with your bra on, get measured with your bra off, or you go to Anna Summers and they're like, well, we don't really do sizing. It's like, okay, fine. How often should you like measure yourself?
I think women know their bodies
enough. If you gain or lose weight, is that usually like
to
do it?
I guess the standard time is like if you feel like you've gained or lost weight. If you have gotten pregnant, you might want to go up in the band just so that it's a little bit roomier, because as your stomach grows, that can come up as far as your bra band.
Yeah.
If you are nursing, or if you're just coming off of nursing, often women come to us because their boobs have changed a lot after they've finished nursing. But I think it really comes down to like how a woman is feeling, and if she feels like there's been a change in her body, then it's time to get a bra fitting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I've got a question from my sister.
Yeah.
So and this kind of ties in with like your boob diaries section that you've got on your website. So my mum is one of seven, and six girls and one boy, and they've all got massive boobs. Three of them, including my mum, have had breast reductions.
Okay.
So we're talking like G's and F's, like big boobs.
Yeah.
I, up until about 4 years ago, was literally like a 32B. I had nothing. And my mum and my sister would go to, I remember because my sister had really big boobs as well, from really young. And they'd have to do like an entire day bikini and bra shopping. It was like this thing. They both used to dread it. My mum would be like, okay, we've got... My sister would get extra money to, like, go and get a proper bra, whereas I could go to, like, Primark and get a £2 triangle bra and, like, be done with it. And so it's this really funny thing of, like, I always wanted bigger boobs because of just how it is in a bikini. You want a bit of a cleavage or this kind of thing. And then I kind of let go of the idea and was just like, whatever, I'm not going to have a boob job and I'm not that bothered about it. And then landed with boobs that have come out of nowhere. So I think the genetics are still there. And now I just want my small boobs back because they are so much easier. And so I totally get the frustration of people with bigger boobs. So the boob diaries, what is that about?
So the boob diaries is something that we basically created last year, where we had so many women coming in that were just customers coming in for a fitting, and they just start like pouring out these stories about their moms and the first time they went bra shopping and whatever, and like the stories kind of I think those experiences help other women that are coming and starting to shop with us.
Yeah.
So we basically started doing these video interviews where women would come in and basically say their name and their bra size, and then we'd ask them questions about their experience with bras or with sustainability. And we tried to kind of have as many, like as diverse a range of women as possible.
Such a good idea, because when you are shopping and you do want to invest in something, you want to know that it's like good.
Yeah.
You know? And I just remember the question from my sister was, she was so blunt, she was like, how to stop them sagging, full stop. Is it just a case of having a good supportive bra, do you think?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. You need to have an underband that actually fits, because otherwise it'll just be kind of baggy and too big, like all the way around.
Yeah.
Like imagine if you measure 30... like 30 inches around the underbust or 28 inches and you're wearing a 32 or a 34, the cup might be the right size, but if it's literally just floating around your body, it can't support you that well.
So
I think, and then getting something that fits nicely around the cup and the shoulder so that your boobs are really being held up.
Are the current bras that you've got in the range, are they suitable for exercise? And if not, are you thinking of doing like sports bras at all?
So we're definitely not athletes in our team. So we don't have a sports bra.
So that's not even like a concept of like, oh yeah, sports bras.
People ask us for them. I know some people wear the Ren to like do yoga
maybe.
And stuff, but not, it's, you know, the fabric's breathable, but it's not athletic material, so I imagine that it wouldn't be right for lots of sports.
Yeah.
But a lot of people ask us for sports bras. I think it's really hard to find them, because a lot of the bras that are sports bras are just minimizers, so they're literally just a crop top.
But like, you mean like kind of push them down?
Yeah, like it's just a flat piece in the front. There's no seams or anywhere, so your boobs are just getting squashed down.
Yeah.
So we've thought about it. I think... thing about having our own factory is that every time we think about a new product, we would have to go and
massive thing, isn't
get
it?
The machines,
get,
you know, train people to make a new type of product, so it's a bit of an undertaking.
But
swimwear and sportswear is stuff that we'd definitely be interested in doing in the future.
I kind of dread to think about like the materials used for active wear, because they tend to be that like really thick kind of probably not very biodegradable.
No,
is that
probably
the case?
Not.
I just think of like wetsuit material, and I think like neoprene and stuff, and that can't be. I don't know.
Yeah, so I don't actually know offhand what kind of material that is, but anything with polyester is not great for the environment. So we definitely look for an alternative to that.
Yeah.
Also, right now we work with dead stock, but at some point we're going to need to get a larger supply of material.
Yeah.
So one thing that we're thinking about is it possible to get a regenerated nylon yarn that mixes with elastane?
Yeah.
But elastics on their own, it's about looking at how eco-friendly that is and how to make that better.
I read recently an interview with Candice Swanepoel, because she has her own swimwear line.
Okay.
And they were saying about sustainability, because she's really into that. I think she's South African, so I think she's just very from nature, and she lives in Brazil and all this kind of thing. And she was talking about how at the moment there's only very few materials that for swimwear that you can actually like go into water with that are eco and sustainable. So like, I think she's working towards a whole range, but at the moment it's only like a few things that can, because nothing's been invented.
There's one company in Italy that makes swimwear fabric from regenerated nylon yarns, and I think pretty much every single swimwear brand that has anything to do with eco anything uses them.
Yeah.
Like they're huge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So where do you see Lara going? Like, would you want to like make a bigger factory, or would you like to keep it how it is? What's like your future plans?
Yeah, I want a big factory that has the reputation of being the best apparel factory to work for in the world.
That's the goal.
One of the things that I think about a lot is that right now in the UK, the average sewing machinist salary is £17,500 a year.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
'Cause when you think about people making these products, it is a really skilled job.
Yeah,
and to only be making that much. So I believe that in the next few years, we can get to an average salary in our factory of double or triple the national average. So that's what I'm
aiming
working
for.
Towards. Yeah.
But if you think about it, like back in the day, you had tailors and you had people that made suits on Savile Row, and you still do. And it was a skill, and you would save up your money and you would go to somebody and it would be made properly. And I think that's what's happened, is the shift towards fast fashion just means that the skill element is taken out of it, because you're just churning out products.
It's just jersey overlocking.
There's no appreciation for what actually goes into it.
Yeah.
So just to round up and finish off, obviously I ask every guest the same questions because I like hearing the diversity in the answers, because everybody's so different. So what does beauty mean to you?
I think it's about feeling healthy.
Okay.
And being in a good, when I'm in a good headspace, and I'm feeling healthy and inspired with whatever I'm working on, then that's when I feel confident.
Yeah.
And that they're all kind of related to me.
Yeah, nice. And, well, that's answered my second question of when you feel most beautiful. It's funny, isn't it? Like when, for me, it's when I've done exercise. Because I just think I feel so energized.
Totally.
That I can go into the gym and look in the mirror and think that I look like a sack of shit. And then go and do a workout for an hour and I look in the mirror and I'm like, I'm amazing! Like, I feel, and I think it's partly because of posture, and you literally stand up straighter and your muscles are engaged. But it's also those endorphins and just like, yeah, I'm okay.
100%. I feel so good after I exercise. I desperately need to do it more.
Do you know what? I was so tired this morning because I've been killing it at the gym recently. I was like, I didn't go to bed late, what is it? It's like, actually, it's just the exercise and my muscle fatigue is just knackering. So what does health mean to you?
I feel healthiest when I think a lot about what I'm putting into my body and how I'm treating my body. So I notice a huge change when I don't have caffeine or alcohol and I eat a lot of fresh things. I feel a million times better than like this week when I had like 10 coffees and that was my entire diet. That's I think a lot about what I eat and how it makes me feel.
And do you think those two concepts of health and beauty and like your personal experience of them, does that kind of filter across to the brand, do you think?
I think Faith and I think a lot about how healthy we feel both in our bodies and in our minds, and we want everybody to be feeling good.
Yeah.
I have this, the way that I've been thinking about things recently is that there's not work and then you go home at 6 and it shuts off, because when you run a business, that's not really realistic.
Yeah.
So I think about it more as you've got one life and you look at it holistically.
Yeah.
So in terms of the factory, we started doing a 4-day work week last November.
Oh my god, amazing.
Yeah,
I was literally speaking to my friend today who used to work in Copenhagen.
Yeah,
he's English, and he said living in London, he was like, Rosanna, what am I doing here? He was like, Copenhagen is literally utopia compared to London, because they have like this 8-8-8 theory, which is 8 hours of work, 8 hours of leisure, 8 hours of sleep, which is obviously 24 hours. And you get kind of looked at very strangely if you work overtime there, like it just doesn't exist. Whereas here we're praised for working really hard and being really productive, when actually it makes us less productive in the long run, because we get ill and sick and stuff. So he was like, what am I doing here, like working 5 days a week is so hard. And he said it's all about the 4-day work week, and I was like, I totally agree, because that's what I do as well. It's 2 days when I'm at uni, but 4 days when I'm working full time. And it's just so much easier to manage, so that's really cool.
Yeah, it's a really nice break. And we also think about in the future, how can we, if we have women that are mothers working for us, how do we incorporate childcare, or how do we make travel easy, or how do we just kind of you know, not just pay people a salary and expect them to show up at 9 a.m. every day, but think about what are the challenges for them that are making their lives difficult, and how can we solve that as a business?
Yeah, I think working mums, it's so hard. I've worked with a few, and even yesterday I got asked to stay after work because something happened with the nursery where she had to leave, and it's just this constant juggling act. And it's not as bad as America in terms of maternity pay, but we need to go more towards like Scandi countries, which really look after parents, because I don't think it's fair to be pregnant and have to worry about money. It's just the worst, isn't it? So any final last words? Is there like a message you want to share and spread to all of our listeners? Can take your time on this one, it's fine.
Yes, I think that everybody listening, I hope that they can feel included in Laura in some way. So if you haven't shopped with us before, try it, give us feedback, tell us what you think, because everybody that comes and shops with us or gives us feedback, that is the core of the brand. So yeah, and I hope that at the moment, I feel a lot like climate change is scary, and there are a lot of things to do with sustainability that are very overwhelming. And there's not a lot that I can do, but in this particular industry, I have a little bit of power and a way to bring people into something that is good and that is ethical. And I want to do that and make it as good and as impactful as it can possibly be. And if there's anybody that wants to help us with that, then please come and be a part of it and get on board.
Yeah, I think it's not focusing on how you can't change the world. It's more about, okay, what can I do in my tiny, my world, my little circle that I can make an impact? That's a nice last word, I think. Thank you so much. I feel like we could talk all day about this. It's so interesting.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for having me. thanks for listening. This is now the 11th episode of Like Her. So if you like what you hear, don't forget to do all the boring stuff. Subscribe, talk about it. Word of mouth is like my best friend with the podcast. Like, share, subscribe, all the rest. Thanks for listening.